Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Mem Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to Option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Gemara will begin 18 lines from the top, a little less than halfway down our Daf Gemara. You'll notice a long question marking that represents the line at which our Gemara will begin. In the margin, we have a tat nosei, a subtopic heading. We must emphasize that we left off our previous year in the middle of a discussion. We were focusing on a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Kinyan peros ke kinyan haguf dami or not? Rabbi Yochanan holds kinyan peros ke kinyan haguf, and Reish Lakish says kinyan peros lav ke kinyan haguf. We will not go over all of the explanations and details because that was all part of our previous year. So if you're a first-time listener, by all means, recognize that we're simply picking up where we left off in our previous discussion. Our tat nosei, our subtopic heading that you can see in the margin, highlights shnei mikrim, two cases, two scenarios, lokach sodomiyav, where a person had purchased land from his father. Understanding that eventually when the father dies, so the son inherits the land. Here, for whatever reason, the son was eager to gain access to a piece of land while his father was alive, so he bought the land from his father. In the Gemara, we will see two scenarios. Meis oviv v'achar kach ikdisha. After buying the land, the father then died, and then the son sanctified the land. He was makdish the land. A second scenario is where, after buying the land from his father, he first sanctified the land, and then the father died. There's an area of halacha that governs the redemption of lands that one had sanctified. There's a standard that applies to what's called a stay mikne, and a standard that applies to something called a stay achuza. For the purposes of this sugya, it's not essential to get into too much detail as to what applies to a stay mikne versus that which applies to a stay achuza. To get a little taste of it, we'll look immediately at Rashi for introductory purposes. Rashi that we're going to look at together is in the upper part of the narrow lines. Dibra Masel Stei Achuza. Stei Achuza means a piece of land that one has by virtue of inheritance. And when we speak about inheritance, as we referred to in our previous shiur, during the Yovel era, lands that were purchased from others when the Yovel year would apply, when the Yovel year would arrive, the land would be restored to its original owner, he who had inherited from his predecessors. A stei achuza, Rashi goes, says, im hikdisha, if a person had sanctified a stei achuza, an inherited property, v'lo go'alo kedem ha-yovel, and had not redeemed it from the possession of the Beis HaMikdash, umochro gizbo liacher, and the gizbo, the temple treasurer, the Beis HaMikdash treasurer, had sold this land to some outsider, Eino nigeles oid. It can no longer be redeemed by the original owner. Okshi yoitza biyovel miyad haloikha mina gizbar. When the Yovel year comes, so it's true someone bought that from the temple treasurer, what happens to the land now? Mishalekis lekehanim shenemar, it gets divided amongst the kehanim. The pasuk says v'lo yigal is hasadet v'yasada betzesei. The Rashi is quoting the psukim in a rather abbreviated fashion, but if the original owner who had sanctified his land had not redeemed it, and it was sold by the Gizbar to some outsiders, that land at Yovel gets distributed amongst the Kehanim. Uste Mikne, when you're dealing with a person that had purchased land from an original owner, Kishehekedisha Veloi Goala, if he had sanctified the Uste Mikne, this purchased property, and had not redeemed it, Umochra Gizbar, and the temple treasurer sold that land, Kshiyotze B'Yovel, when Yovel comes, Chayzeres L'Baylim Rishonim, it goes back to the original owner, Shemochrua Lamaktish, the original owner who had sold it to the one that had sanctified it. Shinemar, the Pasuk says, Bishnas Yovel Yoshuv HaSodeh HaSher Konoyu Meitoi. When the Yovel year comes, it goes back to the one from whom the sanctifier had purchased. Namely, it goes back to the original owner. So from this, you see that it's important to classify property as either a stay achuza or a stay mikne. We turn back to the note that we had on the side. We described two scenarios. One where a son had purchased land from his father. The father died, and then the son sanctified it. We have to ask ourselves, was the son selling a stay achuza or a stay mikneh? The nafgamina, as we learned already in Rashi, we're not going to go over it again. So when that happened, what is the land considered? And the second scenario was a son had purchased land from his father and he sanctified the land while the father was still alive. And then the father died. We continue in the note. Machloikis Tanoim. We're going to see a Tanaic controversy. Imrak number one. Nechshav Stei Achuza. Is case scenario number one alone considered a case of a Stei Achuza being sanctified? Oishigam number two. Have a Achuza. Alpi Droshas HaMikra. Based on darshaning the Pasuk. Lefi Sheilas HaGemara, according to the Gemara's question, Roitzim Lutlois Ezeh, Be'inin Kinyin Perisi Kikinyin Aguf. There's an attempt to say that the analysis to this issue is dependent on the Machlokis Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. And if you in fact say that, it turns out then that the Machlokis Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish will parallel a Machlokis Tanoim that we'll see in this source. Lefi HaDechia, according to the Gemara's rejection, and if you see in the Gemara text itself, we have a long Dalet marking. The Dalet is a Dechia. At that point, the Gemara rejects the attempt to parallel these. HaMachlokis Tolui Be'im Dorshim Kro Yisera. The Machlokis will be dependent on do we darshan, do we expound upon an additional pasuk or additional words in the pasuk. I understand that this appears quite abstract. In fact, the main consideration we haven't even stated in this introduction. But have no fear. The hope is that by going through the Gemara itself, things will become much clearer. Oftentimes, these topic headings that appear on the side, even if they're not beneficial by way of introducing a piece of Gemara, they nevertheless are very beneficial when you want to do a rapid review of what you've learned. You can scan that which you see on the sides of our Shas Ozer, our marked Gemaras. Now the Gemara. Lema Ketanoi. Again, we mentioned we're 18 lines from the top. The question is, shall we say that the Machlokis Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf Domi or not is parallel to the following Tanaic controversy? Minayin Lelokech Sode Me'oviv V'Gedisha V'Achakach Me'Soviv. Notice the double underlining is used to highlight these the two scenarios that we introduced before. A person bought a piece of land from his father, sanctified it, and then the father died. Minayin Shtei Lefon of Kistei Achuzah. From where do we know that this shall be considered a Shtei Achuzah? Let us glance at the Rashi. Minayin Shtei Lefon of Kistei Achuzah Im Lo Goala. If, let us say, the land had not been redeemed by the son, Umochra HaGizbar, and the Gizbar, in the meantime, sold it. Sheyotze LeKehana BiYovel. If we're going to classify it as a Shtei Achuzah, this son isn't going to see the property ever again. When the Yovel comes, it'll be distributed to the Kehanim. So the Brisa is asking, from where do we know that in a case like this where the son purchased land from his father, sanctified it, and then the father died, how do we know that's to be considered a Shtei Achuzah? Shtei Achuzah again means inheritance property. Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, Im Estei Miknosoi Asher Loi Mistei Achuzaso. Sode she'eino ru'uya lios Shtei Achuzah. When is something classified as a state mikne? When it's a kind of field that wasn't fit to be a Shtei Achuzah, an inheritance field. Yotzesazu, to the exclusion of this case, the case where we have a son as the one who purchased the land from his father, not an outsider. An outsider would purchase land from someone. So as far as the purchaser is concerned, it was never going to be a Shtei Achuzah, an inheritance property, because when the Yovel year would come around, he has to part with the land. Here we have a situation of a son having bought property from his father. When we look at this, is it a field that had the potential for being an inheritance piece of property? Certainly yes. So the Pasuk tells us that the law of Shtei Mikneh applies to a Shtei Mikneh and not to a field that had the potential of being a Shtei Achuzah. Yotzezu, to the exclusion of this case where the son was the purchaser of the land, it's true he sanctified it before the father died, but it was ru'uya, it was fit to be shuruya l'shtei achuzah, divrei rebutiv Rabbi Shimon. Now, according to this approach, what about the case of where the father died before the son sanctified it? That's literally a shtei achuzah. That's what it would seem to be, because you have the son that purchased the land, and then the father died. So at the point the father died, you would think to say that, well, that's clearly a case of an inheritance, and that would be a Shtei Achuzah. Let's continue. Rabbi Meir Omer, Minayin l'lokeach sode me'oviv Umeis aviv v'acharkach hikdisha. Minayin shtei lefonav kistei achuza. From where do we know that this scenario is the one that we will treat with the laws of stei achuza? Talmud lomar, im estei miknosoi asher loi mistei achuzaso. The laws of stei mikna apply to purchase fields that are not inheritance fields. Sode she'eino stei achuza, a field that's not an inheritance field. Yotzezozu, to the exclusion of this case of purchase from father, then father died, and then son sanctified it. Shehi stei achuza, that this is a stei achuza. We should point out that as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, that which Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon classified as having the din of a stei achuza is in Rabbi Meir's mind not a stei achuza. And therefore, as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, the scenario where a son bought property from the father, sanctified it, and then the father died, if the Gizbar happened to have sold the land to some outsider before the son ever redeemed the land, when the Yovel comes, the son will get the land back. That's as far as Rebbe Meir is concerned with regard to the scenario that the Tanakama had presented. We continue in the Gemara. V'ilu l'Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Shimon. As far as they are concerned, they were the first opinions. Meis oviv v'achar kach ikdisha lo tzricha kra. The case where a son had bought land from the father died, and only afterwards the son sanctified the land. In order to classify that as a stei achuza, there was no need for a pasuk. My lav beha komifligi. Is it not so that the following is the point of controversy? To see the tie-in of this discussion to the Machloikis, Rabbi Yochanan, and Reish Lakish, we will now see it clearly as we go on in the Gemara. So as the Gemara pointed out, we'll read again, V'ilu Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon, Meis Ove V'achar Kach Hikdisha Lo Tzricha Kra, according to the Tanakama, the first opinions in this source, the scenario of first father dying and then sanctification, not requiring a pasuk, it's clear to them that that is a stei achuza, that that is a field that the son can be viewed as having inherited. In other words, at the point the father died, something new happened with regard to the field. My love, behol kamifliki. Is it not so that the following will be the point of disagreement? The Rebbe Meir Sovar, Kinyan Peros ki Kinyan Haguf Domi. Kinyan Peros is the Kinyan that the son had when he purchased it from the father. Why do we call that a Kinyan Peros? Because when the son purchased it, and we're talking about an era, of course, when the Yovel is in practice, when Yovel comes around, the son would have parted with that land, assuming the father remained alive. So the son's purchase of the land was a Kinyan Peros. What level acquisition does that represent? So according to Rebbe Meir, Kinyan Peros that the son had is a total acquisition. It's equivalent to acquisition of the intrinsic land itself. Kikinyan aguf domi. Ubaha, and in this case, the case that Rabbi Meir had presented, the case where first father died and then the son sanctified it, b'misas oviv, upon the death of the father, who delo yoris velo midi, the son didn't inherit anything. Why not? Because the son already had full possession of the land. By virtue of what? By virtue of the kinyan peros that he had. He had a kinyan peros, which equals kinyan haguf. He had the land lock, stock, and barrel. With the father's death, there was no legal manifestation of inheritance. Can you call the death of the father a catalyst for classifying this as a stay achuza of an inheritance land? No. The hilkoch, since the death of the father doesn't make the land that the son had acquired into a stay achuza, will we call it a stay achuza? Will the laws of stay achuza apply? So Rabbi Meir says, "V'hilkoch meis ove v'achakach hikdisho tzorich kro." Therefore, if for that very scenario, I'll need a pasuk to establish it as a stay achuza. Just to go over that point again, in that case where the father died before the son sanctified it, since the son's acquisition was a kinyan peros, which Rabbi Meir would call a kinyan aguf, the death of the father doesn't represent any the transition of the land from a stay mikna into a stay achuza. The son had already been a complete owner of it. Therefore, in order to classify it as a stay achuza anyway, you're going to need a special gzeras hakos. You're going to need a pasuk to do that. Rabbi Yehuda ve Rabbi Shimon Savri, they, on the other hand, hold like Reish Lakish, kinyan peros lav ki kinyan aguf domi. The son's acquisition of the land during the Yovel era is not like an intrinsic acquisition of the land. Ubaha, in the case of the son having purchased the land and then the father dies, b'misas aviv hashta hu t'koyoris. Oh, with the father's death, he is now acquiring intrinsic ownership of the land. That is then a clear case of it becoming a stay achuza with regard to the son. V'hilkoch, therefore, that case is so obvious, it doesn't need a pasuk to establish it as a stay achuza. So if there is anyway a pasuk, the pasuk that we read above in the Tanaic source, what's the pasuk going to address? What is it going to refer to? It can't refer to the obvious. Therefore, v'chi itzdirich kro lahigdisha v'achar kach meis oviv hu de itzdirich. The role of the posuk will be to establish as a stay achuza, a case where a son bought property from the father, and then the son sanctified the property while the father was still alive. When the father died, so the son wasn't really inheriting anything because the property was in the domain of the Beis Hamikdash. It was sanctified. He sanctified it before the father died. When the father dies, is the son inheriting anything? No. Are we going to call it a stay achuza? So the pasuk reveals to us that which I wouldn't have thought on my own, that even that will be called a stay achuza with the relevant laws that apply, as we saw at the beginning when we read the Rashi. At this point, then, let's just evaluate what we have accomplished. We mentioned at the beginning of today's shir that we said leimo ketanoi in the Gemara. Can we say that the machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish kinyan peres ke kinyan aguf is a machlokes tanoim? At this point, it would appear yes, it's a machlokes tanoim. And according to Rabbi Meir, kinyan peres ke kinyan aguf, just like Rabbi Yochanan had said. And according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, kinyan peres la kinyan aguf, dummy, as Reish Lakish had said. The Gemara rejects this approach. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok li oylo mei malach ve'almo kosavri Reb Yehuda v'Reb Shimon. In general, Rav Nachman says Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon would say kinyan peros ke kinyan haguf domi. The acquisition of land with regard to fruits, i.e. land purchased during the Yovel era, is tantamount to a full-fledged intrinsic ownership of the land. The question will be, how then will we know that in the case of Hikdisha Umeis Oviv, that becomes a Steachusa? Once you tell me that even Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon tell me that Kinyan Peros Kinyan Aguf, I'll need the pasuk to tell me the case of son buying, father dying, and then sanctification. Because, we'll say, even that case is not, it's not obvious that it's a steachusa. Because the son had already acquired everything with his initial kinyan peros. With the father's death, even before the sanctification, nothing happened. So the father's death doesn't represent the land turning into a steachusa, into an inheritance land. The son didn't inherit anything. He already owned everything. So if I'll need the pasuk for the case of Meis Oviv V'achar kach Hikdisha to establish that as a steachusa, what about the, we'll say, the less obvious case where the son bought the land, sanctified it, and then the father died? How will I know that even that's going to be considered a steachusa? Let's continue in the Gemara. V'hacha Reb Yehuda Reb Shimon kro ashkechu v'dorosh. Yehuda and Reb Shimon that classified both scenarios as a steachusa, they had, we'll call it, an extra scriptural basis upon which to establish their position. What is their, we'll say, their extra scriptural basis? Lichtoiv Rachmono, let the Torah simply have written, if the Torah wasn't coming to include the case of Higdisha V'achar kach Meis Oviv, then the Torah could have simply written Im es stei miknosoi asher lo achuzoso. That's not what it said. My mi stei achuzoso. So from the fact that the Torah phrased it the way it did, mi stei achuzoso, we learn sode she'eino re'uya lios stei achuza. What's a stei mikneh? It's only that kind of field that never had the potential of being a stei achuza. Yotzazu, to the exclusion of the case where it was makdish v'achar kach meis aviv, shibra'uya lios stei achuza. That was a field that, well, if the son, you're dealing with a father and son, so if the son never bought the land, that was a piece of land that was in potential going to be a steachusa. So any land that had the potential of being a steachusa, halachically, as far as Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are concerned, is classified as a steachusa, with all that that implies. Omer of Yosef. This is a new point. Omer of Yosef, Ilav the Omer of Yochanan, Kinyan Peros ke Kinyan Aguf Domi. If Rabbi Yochanan had not assumed that position, Lo Motza Yodav Araglo Vaveza Medrash, literally translated, he wouldn't have had his, he wouldn't have found his hands and feet in the study hall, meaning he would have nothing to stand on. He would have, he would represent a position that could be easily rejected. Why? Because this is in light of something else Rabbi Yochanan said. The Omer of Asi, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Ho'achin shecholku, sons that inherited an estate from their father and divided the estate, divided the lands amongst each brother. L'kuchesein, u'machzirin ze lo ze b'yovel. They're viewed as purchasers. And when the Yovel comes, they redistribute the land. According to this approach, we say ein breira. We don't accept, say, retroactive determination. We don't say that when the distribution of the land took place upon the father's death, that each parcel of land was the parcel that was, we'll say, time immemorial, marked for this particular son. We don't say that. And therefore, they're viewed as purchasers, and when the Yovel comes, they re-pool the estate and redistribute it. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's position with regard to inheritance. V'in salka daitach, if one were to think, lav kekinyan haguf domi, that purchase of fruit rights, or purchase of land, or let's say receipt of land during the Yovel era, is considered a kinyan peros alone without kinyan haguf. Loy mishkachas demaisi bikurim. You'll never have a situation of someone who brings, we say bring Bikurim the Kore, and also read the Parsha, Elochad Barchad Ad Yeshua Ben Nun, Ad Yeshua Ben Nun, with the exception of the case of a father that had an only son, and that son in turn had an only son, and would continue that way down the generations. Because if you have any other case, you would have achin shecholku. You would have sons that divided an estate. If a father has multiple sons, he divided the estate. And they're viewed in Rabbi Yochanan's eyes as purchasers. And purchasers of what? You're dealing with the Yovel era. So they never have, if Rabbi Yochanan would say, kinyan peros was not kinyan aguf, they would never have an intrinsic possession of the land. And if you don't have an intrinsic possession of the land, you can't say, Huadomo asher nosatali, that I'm bringing these fruits from the land that you gave me. Adomo asher nosatali implies that you have an intrinsic, you have ownership of the intrinsic land as well. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan's position of kinyan peres kinyan aguf enables us to appreciate that every year, people who inherited land from their father, even though they were amongst other brothers, they had other brothers that shared with the in the estate. Each heir brings bikurim and says, "Huadoma sher nosatali." Ah, they're going to re-pull the property when Yovo comes. That doesn't matter. Kinyan peros kinyan aguf. And hence, holding that position of kinyan peres kinyan aguf, we can appreciate the mitzvah of mikra bikurim, of bringing the bikurim and reading the parsha every year without any hesitation, without limiting it to the strange, unlikely, improbable case of a single son inheriting from a father who himself was a single heir way all the way back to the time of Yehoshua. It's in that case, of course, there's no, in the case you have single an only son inheriting from a father who was an only son, etc., In that case, you don't have achim shechoku. You don't have a case of brothers having divided the land. So there, it's clear you're a sole owner and not going to be viewed as a purchaser of the land. But once you introduce multiple sons into the picture, you're dealing with achim shechoku. You're dealing with a person that divided land. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, you have the din of a purchaser. And as such, only if you say kinyan peros kinyan aguf, that the kinyan peros that you have in the land is as if you have an intrinsic holding, then we would not be able to suggest the bringing bikurim and reading the parsha, except for this strange case. Omar Rava, kro umasniso misayeya le l'reish lokish. The pasuk and a Tanaic source support the position of Reish Lakish, that Kinyan Peres is not Kinyan Haguf. What does Rava have in mind? Kra, so the Pasuk he has in mind is, now we go to the top of Omid Beis. The Pasuk says, and this Pasuk is dealing with the time that the Yovel is practiced. It says, B'mispar Shnei Tevuos Yimocher Loch. The translation has to do with the in accordance with the years of grains that were sold. What do you mean the grains that were sold? Are you not dealing with properties that were sold? So Rashi points out at the top line, Mispar Shnei Tevuos B'Shasi Yovel Mishtoi. The Pasuk is speaking during the time of Yelkirativ. The Pasuk also says B'Mispar Shonim Achara Yovel V'Chule. Alma ein guf hakarka mochur. From the pasuk, you see that the intrinsic land itself wasn't sold. Ela tevuos shel kol shana. We didn't give the background to the pasuk, but it had to do with land sold during the Yovel era. And if there was a desire on the part of the owner to redeem the land, you have to calculate the number of years that remain till the next Yovel in order to come to the proper rate for redemption. We're not spelling out all the details, but what we want to show here is that you have a pasuk dealing with the sale of land during the Yovel period, and the land sale is viewed as the sale of grains. Well, and we see from that even though land was transacted in reality or in actuality, it was only the land with respect to the fruit, with the produce that it produces. And hence, the Kinyan Peros is only that, and not Kinyan Haguf. Masnisa Desanyo, the Tanaic source says, Bechor notel pishnayim besode hachoyzeres le'oviv be'yovel. A firstborn receives a double portion of those lands that would return to his father during the at the Yovel year. Now that's a little bit terse. Rashi gives a brilliant explanation, and let's learn it together. Third line from the top: Bechor note v'chulei besode achozeres lova biyova klomar besode achozeres laachim machmas shemochro avien. There's a family, and the father had sold land. When the Yovel year comes, that sold land will be returned to whom? To this group of brothers. The father is no longer alive. If you're talking about land that had been sold by the father and Yovel came while the father was still alive, and then afterwards the father died, pshita, it's obvious the firstborn gets a double portion. So I don't have to, the Tanaic source doesn't have to tell me about the obvious case. So what is it telling us about? It's talking about a case where the father died before the Yovel arrived. So you have sons that inherited an estate. In the meantime, there's some outstanding land. It's in the possession of some purchaser. When the Yovel year comes, that land will be distributed amongst the brothers, with the Bechor, with the firstborn, getting a double portion. The firstborn doesn't get a double portion just of anything. There are very specific rules that apply. And Rashi goes on. The Ashma'inan, this source reveals to us, the guf hakarka lohoya kani lalaykeach. That fellow, the outsider who purchased from their father, never acquired the intrinsic land itself. Vehave le muchzuk li oviv lifnei moso. The ownership of the intrinsic land was actually maintained or held by the father of these sons. That's extremely important, because the rule of Bechor getting Pishnayim, a firstborn getting a double portion, that applies only to things that the father was in possession of at the time he died. The Ik Kinyan Aguv Domi, if the purchaser of that land had been viewed as owning the goof as well, Havele Ro'ui, that land vis-a-vis the brothers was land that was only expected to be returned to their father. Ve'ena b'chor nota b'roi, and we know that a firstborn, when he gets a double portion, he doesn't get a double portion in only in anticipated collections, anticipated acquisitions of the father. Dechtiv, the Pasuk says, regarding double portion, it says, B'chol asher yimotzei lo. Firstborn gets double portion of that which is in the father's possession at the time he dies. B'muchzuk b'yado, something the father is holding on to. So in order for the Bechor, the firstborn, to get a double portion of lands that would be returned to them in the Yovel, you'll have to say that the purchaser never purchased the intrinsic land. What did the purchaser acquire? Kinyan Peros, and Kinyan Peros is not Kinyan Aguf. Where was the Kinyan Aguf? It remained by their father. And since it remained by their father, when the father died, the Kinyan Aguf that he had was distributed amongst the brothers, with the firstborn getting a double portion. Omar Abayi, we continue in the Gemara, third line from the top. Naktinon, we have a tradition. Ba'al b'nichse ishto, tzorach harsha. A husband has rights to property that his wife brought into the marriage. What rights does he have? We refer to the nichse melug, property that she brings in from her father to her marriage. The husband has fruit rights. He cannot sell the land to someone else, but he can benefit from the fruits that those lands produce. Let us say someone came to contest the wife's ownership of those lands. Can the husband litigate against that challenger without the harsha, which is a power of attorney? Without that, the husband has no right to argue, to fight, to litigate against the challenger, because the challenger can say, who are you? There's an expression you see in Rashi, la bal dvorim didiat. You're not my challenger, you're an outsider, you have nothing to do with me, so get lost. If a husband wants to have, let's say, the power to defend his wife's ownership of the land, he is going to have a harsha, that means power of attorney, where his wife assigns the husband power to litigate on her behalf. What does that show us? It shows us that the kinyan peros that the husband has is not kinyan haguf. It's not viewed as if he has intrinsic ownership of the land, because if it were that way, then the litigant couldn't tell the husband get lost or take a walk, lav bal dvorim di diat, you're challenging the ownership of the land, in the intrinsic value of the land. I claim ownership of that through my kinyan peros. Ah, but Abaye says the husband can't litigate unless he gets power of attorney. So as we said, that shows us that the husband's kinyan peros is not kinyan haguf. And without that power of attorney, the husband is viewed as an outsider regarding this litigant. However, v'lo amoron ela delo nochis apiri. This, we'll say, exclusion of the husband from the case and the absence of arsha is true only if the litigant was not coming to argue or claim ownership of the fruits. Avol nochis apiri, if that litigant started up, he came in to fight and argue regarding the fruits themselves, that is already something that the husband has ownership of. We then say, migu de mishtoya dino apiri, since the husband has a right to argue against him with regard to the fruits, mishtoya dino agufa, along with that, he can then argue regarding the ownership of the intrinsic land as well. But that's by virtue of migu. Migu means since. Since he's already getting involved because there was a challenge to the peros, which the husband is directly related to, so he can add to that challenge and argue on behalf of the wife's ownership of the intrinsic land as well. As you can see, we've, with the Siyata Dishmaya, completed the fourth perek of Gittin, and now, Be'ezras Hashem, we continue the fifth perek HaNizokin. The Mishnah speaks about three different types of financial obligation. And when we speak about financial obligation, the expectation is that a person will pay up his obligation with cash. In the event that he doesn't have cash, so the creditor, as that's just one of the three examples, the one to whom the money is owed will have a right to collect land from the one who owes the money. We'll speak about a person who damaged, so he has a debt to compensate for the damage he caused. We'll speak about a borrower who owes land to a creditor, someone had extended him a loan. And we'll talk about a woman collecting her ksuba, a married woman whose husband either died or divorced her, comes to collect her ksuba. And in each one of the cases, the one who owed the money is not paying cash, so they will be collecting land. As far as the value of what they'll be collecting, it corresponds to whatever the debt was, whatever the value of the damage was, he's going to collect that value in terms of land. What will become a variable is the quality of the land that will be collected. By rule of thumb, we can assume that people would prefer getting high quality land as opposed to getting poor quality land. In other words, imagine the cost of a parking spot in Manhattan versus 100 acres in the middle of a desert in Utah. They probably have the same market value, but people would prefer to have edis. It's called edis, high quality land, even though, see, in terms of dimensions or measure, it's going to be much less. That having been said, we should just mention there are three land qualities that we'll be seeing initially in the Mishnah. Edis, top quality land; Beinonis, middle quality land; and Ziburis, poor quality land. When we speak about land qualities as well, do we talk in terms of objective regional land qualities, or are they subjective issues of land quality, where you can have a situation of someone who borrowed money, and the lands, the different kinds of lands that he has is such that his best quality land corresponds to the lender's poorest quality land. So it's the question comes up of which standard do we use if we say that the that this is a subjective issue. These are points that will come up in the course of the Gemara. Let's now turn to the Mishnah. Hanizokin shomen lahem be'idis. Nizokin are people that were damaged, and if they're going to be collecting land, they're entitled to collect top quality land from the mazik, from the damager. Ubal chov, someone who had borrowed money, and if he's not paying in cash, the lender, the beinonis, will collect from beinonis middle quality land. Uksubas isha beziburis, the woman collecting her ksuba, the financial guarantee that a woman has upon being divorced or becoming widowed, the land quality that she will collect from her husband's properties, husband's estate, will be from the poor quality, poorest quality. Rabbi Meir Omer af ksubas isha bebeinonis. Rabbi Meir disagrees regarding the ksubas isha collection. Ein nefroin min nechosim mishuabodim b'mokom shiyesh nechosim b'nechorin ve'afilu hein ziburis. One who is collecting a debt is not entitled to collect from purchasers who purchase land from the debtor in the event that the debtor has possession of land that he hasn't sold. Even if the land that remains in the debtor's possession is ziburis, is poor quality land. The term that that applies to land that was sold after the debt was incurred. We focus on simply a borrower of money. We have several examples here, but we'll focus on a person who borrowed money, and after he borrowed the money, happened to sell land to some outsiders. Can the lender collect from those outsiders that bought? Not so if the borrower still has land in his own possession. Even if the land that's in his own possession is ziburis, is poor quality land, and those that purchased were of high quality, you can't bother them, because those who purchase land can argue, if they're seized upon, they can argue, when we bought the land, we had left by the borrower a source of collection for your debt. So don't bother us. Go to the guy that borrowed the money from you. We continue. Ein nifroin min nechsei yisoimim elo min aziburis. When collection is made from orphans, if, let us say, their father had owed money, so if the father himself was still alive and he wasn't going to pay cash, he would pay for middle quality land. In the event that the father dies, but the debt still exists, the orphans are going to have to pay up the debt, but they will pay it from poor quality land. Ein moitzien, there's a list of points mentioned in the Mishnah, and Rashi explains them. Let's first read the list. Ein moitzien lachilas peros uleshvach karkois ulemozon isha v'abonos minachosim mishuabodim mitnei tikkun ha'olam. So for the public welfare, we will not go to purchasers for the payment of these things. Achilas peros, shvach karkois, etc. We take a look at Rashi. Rashi that we're looking at is more or less across from here, a couple lines down. You see, Ein Motzien Lachilas Peros Ulishvach Karkois. What does that refer to? Hagoizel Sode, a person stole land. Umochro Liacher, and sold it to a purchaser. Vizarov, Etzomcha, and the purchaser who purchased from the thief, he cultivated the land, things grew, Vasaperos, and produce was realized. Ubo nigzal v'gova impero simna l'keach, and the victim of the theft, the nigzal, he finds where the land is. It's found. He finds it by that purchaser. He collects his land with the fruits. V'eino mishal l'keach ki'im ha'yitzia. The nigzal he will compensate the purchaser for his expenses. The purchaser who cultivated the land, so he maybe invested in some seed and fertilizer, so he'll get compensation for that, but he doesn't get compensation from the victim of the theft for the fruits. Well, the lokeach, though, lost the land together with the fruits. Chozer ha-lokeach al ha-mocher v'goyve. The purchaser goes to the thief, the seller who was the thief, and collects demei hakarka, and we have that in a diamond. A few lines later, you see peros. Ha-peros, also in a diamond. He's seeking compensation for the land that he bought from the thief, and he's seeking compensation for the fruits as well. So how does the purchaser seek his compensation, or from what source does he collect? Demei hakarka minuchosim mishu'abodim. The thief, when he sold the land to the purchaser, he sold the land with a guarantee that if you should lose the property, then you can seek compensation for it. You have a guarantee. The kosev lo shtar mechira varehi milveh b'shtar. A title was a deed was drawn up with a guarantee in it, so that if the purchase took place at the first of the month of Nisan, and this thief sold other properties on the 10th of the month of Nisan, and the original purchaser lost the property, he can seek compensation from the fellow who bought from that thief on the 10th of Nisan, because when he bought it on the 1st of Nisan, he bought it with a guarantee, and that anyone who bought after that would know that they are subject to the collection of this fellow who bought before them. Rashi goes on, V'yas ha-peros, the victim of the lokeach who lost his land, that lokeach who lost the land with the fruits, he collects the peros minechosim b'nei chorin, v'lo mimshuvam. B'nei chorin are properties that are currently in the possession of the seller, the thief in this case. He cannot go to subsequent purchasers for the collection of peros. V'gmor meforesh taima, the Gemara will explain the reason for that. V'chein l'shvach karkois imishbicha lokeach b'netiyas ilonos o'taiva b'sevel v'daira. There's another collection that the lokeach, when he loses the property, he may have, after purchasing the land, he may have invested improvements in the land by planting trees, fertilizing the land, or what have you. In order to get compensation for that, we say the purchaser can turn only to the B'nai Chorin, to lands currently held by the seller, and not to lands that he had sold afterwards. So the Mishnah had taught that collection is not going to be made for Achilas Peres, for Shvach Karkos, as we just saw explained in Rashi. You're not going to go to Mishubodim, to people who had purchased land subsequently. Mozon Ha'isha, that the Mishnah mentioned, is a reference to the maintenance, the sustenance of a woman. She has a right to receive mozon, food money from her husband's properties. So that payment, money made for the woman to collect, for the woman to buy food, she can draw money only from assets that are currently held by her husband, and not from properties that he had sold. V'habonos as well, that's mazon for the daughters. Those are they cannot be collected minuchosim mishubodim because of tikkun olam. Because if we allow the purchasers to be seized upon for all of these different payments, people aren't going to want to engage in commerce, and everything will come to a halt. So mipnei tikkun olam, we protect the purchasers from being collected for these payments. The Mishnah continues, v'amotzei mitzia, if one finds a lost article, and He is returning it to the owner. Let us say the owner challenges the finder and says, you know, you're not giving me everything back that you found. The law says, lo yishava, the returner is exempt from swearing to substantiate his position. Why do we exempt him? Mitnei tikkun ha'olam. Rashi emphasizes that this mitnei tikkun goes on everything said before in the Mishnah, including this. Can you imagine people who return lost articles? Would they want to return them if they'd be subjected to an oath on the part of the owner? People would hesitate returning altogether. The Gemara asks, regarding the opening of the Mishnah, which said, HaNizok in Shalman Lembeidus, people who are the victims of damage, collect from top quality land, and we mentioned time and time again in this Mishnah that the teachings of this Mishnah are based on Tikkun Olam. They're laws that are not letter of the law, but they exist because it's for the public benefit. Is that an accurate description of saying the Nizok in Shalman Beidus? Mipnei Tikkun Olam, Doi Raisahi. That's a Torah-based principle. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Meitav Sadeu, Meitav Karmo Yishalem. That when one is paying for damages, he pays from Meitav. Meitav means top quality, best stuff, like the word Tov. So what is the Mishnah referring to when it says that the Nizokin get paid Idis, but only Mipnei Tikkun Olam? Omar Abaye. Abaye represents the first Hesber, the first of two Hesberim, for what is the reference to Tikkun Olam regarding Nizikin Min HaIdus when it seems to be Doraisa. Now Abaye is number one. You're probably wondering, where is number two? And you might be looking down to the rest of this Omid, you won't find it. And even if you look at Mem Tes Amud Aleph, you're not going to find number two either. There is a number two on Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis, where Ravina presents his approach to the Mishnah, which differs from Abaye. Abaye says that our Mishnah is necessary to be taught for Rabbi Yishmael. Ravina will tell us that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Akiva. And, of course, then we'll have to understand the difference. But in the course of today's shiur, we're not going to get to Ravina. Let's then focus on Abaye. Omar Abaye, we read this, Lo Tzrichel Rabbi Shmuel, Diomar, Rabbi Shmuel had said, Midaraisa B'denizik Shaiminon. That on a Torah level, when the victim of the damage comes to collect, we say he's entitled to collect top quality land. What do you mean top quality land? Top quality vis-a-vis the land that you, the victim, have. If you, the victim, if the Nizak has several qualities of land, we look at his best quality land, we get a good feeling, we size it up, what's the makeup of this land that makes it for him his best quality of land, and then we go to the damager, to the perpetrator, we go to him and we look at his various lands, and we find amongst his lands that which is parallel to the victim's best quality land. It could very well be that the mazik, the damager, the perpetrator, has other qualities of land that are far superior, but that we don't touch. Mi d'oraisa, when you're dealing with the Torah level evaluation. Komash malon, our Mishnah tells us, the Gemara continues, Komash malon me'atikana ulam shaminon be'demazik. For the benefit of society, we say that the damager is going to have to pay with his own best quality land. How is there public benefit in such an approach, such a ruling? Very simply, if a person knows that he's going to have to part with a portion of his best quality land, he's going to be very careful not to create damages. And with that, we will have accomplished Tikkun Olam. So our Mishnah that said, Hanizokin Shomen Lohem Be'idis, victims of damage we evaluate in terms of Idis, and that's Tikkun Olam. It means to say that damage victims we evaluate in terms of Idis of the Mazik, of the perpetrator. And evaluating in terms of his best quality land is a Tikkun Olam. And that's, as we say, that's not Doraisa, but that's Tikkun Olam. Abaye said that our Mishnah is necessary in accordance with Rabbi Yishmael's approach. By saying that, you're indicating that there's someone has a different approach. So the Gemara asks, my Rabbi Yishmael, what is the reference? What do you mean by this reference to Rabbi Yishmael? Tisanya, now we have a Tanaic source. Analysis of this source is going to occupy extensive Gemara content. We want to immediately note that Rabbi Shmuel appears in the source, and Rabbi Akiva appears in the same source as coming to argue with him. The source reads, Tisanya, Meitav Sodeu, Meitav Karmo Yishalem. That when damage is made, so payment must be from the best of the fields and the best of the vineyards. Best of whose vineyards? Best of whose fields? Meitav sodeu shel nizak, umeitav karmo shel nizak, divrei Rabbi Shmuel. The payment is based on the victim's best quality. Rabbi Akiva Omer lo bo hakosuv elo ligvois lenezikin minoidis v'kal v'chomer lehegdish. Superficially, in order to establish that there's a machlokas here, Rabbi Akiva then would represent the opinion that says that the posuk is a reference to paying for damage from the best quality of the mazik. And then there's an obscure phrase at the end of this source that says, "V'kal v'chomer lehegdish." The Gemara will deal with that later on. Before going further, let us learn the Rashi you find on the first line under the Gemara. Meitav sadeu shel nizak. Hashta mashma, the thinking right now is, Shim shilach be'iroi v'ochla aruga shel beisa b'sadeh chavero. If a person's be'iro is a person's animal, a person's cow was sent forth or walked ahead and consumed an aruga, a roe, within a base saw. So a base saw is a measure of land belonging to his friend, the neighbor, and we'll call him the victim. Shomen aruga yofe shebechol stay hanizak v'noisein lo domeha. The thinking right now is, this is going to change when we go through the Gemara, but the thinking right now is that when the damager has to pay, we'll find the best row in the victim's field and evaluate how much, what's the value of that best row, and that value will be paid by the damager in cash to the victim. Even if the row that was damaged was weak, was of poor quality. Well, the common parak, the Gemara is going to ask, that kind of law doesn't make any sense. Ochal klusha mishalim shmeina, because a poor quality of row was eaten, was consumed, was damaged, the perpetrator has to pay much more. He has to pay the value of the best quality row. In the meantime, that's the thinking, and that's also the lead-in for the Gemara. By the Tanaic source, it said, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the perpetrator will pay in accordance with the victim's best quality of land. So that you, the thinking then is that the perpetrator will have to evaluate, or the court will evaluate the equivalent amount in damage, say dimension wise, that a row of that was damaged, and then find the value of the best quality row of the victim, and that's the amount that the damage will have to pay. And as we said when we learned the Rashi, that doesn't make sense. The Gemara asks, Ula Rebbe Yishmael, according to what Rebbe Yishmael said, that we evaluate in terms of Meitav Sadeu Shel Nizik, Ochal Shmeino Mishalim Shmeino. That I can understand. If the perpetrator allowed his animal to eat, Shmeino means literally fat, rich, top quality land was damaged, so pay for that. Pay top quality. Ochal Klusha Mishalim Shmeino. But if the row that was damaged was klusha, was poor quality, is Rabbi Shmuel going to say that the perpetrator nevertheless has to pay in accordance with the value of the best quality of the nizak? Is that his intent? Now that can't be. So we have to explain under what circumstances did Rabbi Shmuel say that the mazik is going to pay in terms of the edis of the nizik. The triangles are featured on the side of the Gemara under our Nosei / Mivne heading. The triangle represents Nisyonos, attempts, Lefaresh, to explain, Be'ez and Nesivis Lefi, Rabbi Yishmael, under what circumstances, according to Rabbi Yishmael, Hamazik Mishalim Karka, B'Shoivi Ha'idis Shel Hanizak. What's the case? What are the circumstances where the mazik will pay, will compensate in terms of the best quality of land owned by the victim? The hesber amachlokes im Rabbi Akiva shamazik mishalein idis shelo. These are, as I say, these are attempts to explain the circumstances under which Rabbi Shmuel's din applies, and also the hesber of the machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. That will be dealt with on Mem Tes Amud Aleph. So now we turn to the Gemara. Omar Rav Idi Bar Ovin, Hocho B'mayaskinon, the Tanaic source in which Rabbi Shmuel's opinion appeared, is dealing with the following. Kegoin She'ochlo Arugo Beino Arugos. An animal owned by someone who was careless and allowed his animal to go into his neighbor's field, it ate a row of produce from amongst the many different rows that were in the field. And we don't know the quality of the row that this animal ate. Was it poor quality? Was it top quality? Demeshalem le mimekav. We say then that the perpetrator has to pay in accordance with the value of the best quality in the victim's field. Best quality row, how much is that worth? And that's how much the owner of the damaging animal will have to pay. Rava challenges this. Omar Rava, Ilu yadino de klusha ochal. Mishalim Klusha. Had we known for sure that the damaging animal consumed a poor quality row, how much would the offender have to pay in accordance with the value of that poor quality row? You pay for what you damaged. Hashta deluyadinon Mishalim Shmeina. According to what Ravidi said, now that I don't know which row was damaged, is Rabbi Shmuel going to impose upon me to pay in accordance with the victim's best quality row? That can't be. When you have a doubt in money matters and you want to extract payment from someone, the rule says, Hamotzi mechaveroi olav harayo. The one who was motzi, who was trying to take away, someone's trying to extricate or extract from someone, he has the burden of proof to establish that. In this case, the victim is the motzi mechaveroi. The victim would have to prove to the damager that it was his best quality that was destroyed. And if not, so he's not, if there's doubt and there's no proof to what was destroyed, there's not going to be payment from the best quality of the nizik. In that case, we'll spare the damager, the owner of the animal, from paying the edis rate. Elo Omar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. And we continue at the top of Daf Mem Tes. Hocha b'mayaskinan, the Tanaic source in which Rabbi Shmuel taught his din of Mishalim. We have the Pusik itself, where you pay according to the edis of the Nizak. What are the circumstances? Kagon shoysa edis the Nizak kaziburus the Mazik. The victim has several qualities of land, where his best quality of land corresponded to the poorest quality of land of the mazik, of the perpetrator. Rabbi Shmuel Savar b'denizak sheminon. Rabbi Shmuel says, we evaluate in terms of the victim's best quality. Rabbi Akiva Savar b'demazik sheminon. And Rabbi Akiva holds that we make the evaluation in terms of the mazik's, the perpetrator's, best quality. Bear in mind that right now we're talking on a Torah level. The Tanaic source in which Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel argue, they're arguing concerning a pasuk, Meitav Sede Meitav Karmo Yishalem. So on a strictly Torah level, we're not dealing with the Tikkun Olam that the Mishnah referred to, but on a basic Torah level, Rabbi Shmuel says that the payment that the perpetrator makes is in terms of top quality land held by the Nizak. And Rabbi Akiva says in terms of the Mazik. And we should also point out that this approach is dealing with an evaluation of land value in order... an evaluation, we'll say, of the damage which will be paid by land. The payment for the damage is not going to be in cash terms, but it's going to be paid through land. Which quality of land is going to be used to pay? It'll be paid from top quality of land. Who's top quality? According to Bishmuel, the perpetrator will seek amongst his land holdings a piece of land that corresponds to the victim's best quality land. According to Rabbi Akiva, the perpetrator isn't going to look in the property of the victim. He's going to, after they evaluate how much the damage was worth, and the perpetrator isn't going to be paying cash, the mazik will find his own best quality of land and pay that in accordance with the value of the damage. So if the value of the damage was $100 for argument's sake, the payment according to Rabbi Shmuel would be $100 of the mazik's poorest quality land. $100 of land. How much? $100 of land. Which land? Of the mazik's poorest quality. Why, according to Rabbi Shmuel? Because in this case, the mazik's poorest quality land is the same as the nizak's top quality land. Rabbi Akiva, he will tell us that the perpetrator finds $100 of his own best quality land and gives that to the victim. The Gemara continues. My time at Rabbi Shmuel. What's the basis for Rabbi Shmuel that the payment is made in terms of Nizak's best quality land? Nemro sode lemato, v'nemro sode lemala. There's a gzera shava. One pasuk says we read the pasuk Metav Sadehu. Another pasuk says Ubir B'Stei Acher. Ma Sode Amur L'Malo Denizak. The pasuk says Ubir B'Stei Acher, and the animal consumes, eats in the land of so and so, land in the other guy's land. So the word Sodeh is referring to the victim's land. So Af Sode Amur L'Mato, so too the word Sodeh in the context of Meitav Sodehu, his best quality land, is Denizak. It is a reference to the victim's best quality of land. And therefore, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the perpetrator, when he pays from a piece of property amongst his property holdings that corresponds to the best quality property held by the Nizak. In reality, it might very well be that the Mazik is paying from his own poorest quality land, but it corresponds to the best quality land owned by the victim. Rabbi Kiva Savar, he doesn't work with a Gezerah Shava, but he simply says, Meitav Sodehu Yishalem, Deheich Deko Mishalem. The Pasuk is addressing the perpetrator, the damager. And the Pasuk is saying, Yishalem, you will pay, Meitav Sodehu, you will pay from your best quality land. So we'll say the simple reading of the Pasuk would indicate that the perpetrator, the damager, pays from his own best quality land. And that seems to be a very strong argument. The Rebbe Shmuel, what's his response? Ahani gzera shava v'ahani kro. The gzera shava that we introduced before, sodeh sodeh, that has value, it has it teaches us something. And the pasuk, the simple reading of the pasuk, also teaches us something. And here the Gemara spells it out. Ahani gzera shava l'chadam moron. The gzera shava works as we already explained. Ahani kra, the pasuk which implies that payment is made in accordance with the mazik's land, where does that apply? Before we read the Gemara is a bit terse. Let's try to explain it outside. We have a little list on the side in the margin. It says mehayoker lezoil. It means from best quality, from expensive lezoil to cheap to poor quality. We're going to describe a situation where you've got, of course, a mazik and a nizik, a perpetrator and a victim of damage. Idis de mazik, the top quality land owned by the perpetrator, is worth more than idis de nizak, than the top quality of the victim. However, the mazik has poor quality land, and we call that the ziburis of the mazik. The poor quality of the land owned by the mazik is worth less than the idis of the nizak. To review that which we've already said, Rabbi Shmuel mentioned that he mentioned gzeirah shava. The gzeirah shava applied to what you saw on the top line of the Gemara. Let's go over the top line of the Gemara again. Hocha b'mayaskinon, kigon shoyse idis denizak kiziburis demazik. The list we had on the side doesn't illustrate that. So the gzeirah shava addresses a case where the top quality land of the nizak equaled the poor quality land of the mazik, and the gzeirah shava of Rabbi Shmuel entitles the perpetrator to pay with his poorest quality land. Why? Because by paying with his poorest quality land, he's in effect giving the victim, he's paying the victim land that equals the victim's best quality. In the case we just described on the side, would it be right for the mazik to pay with his poorest quality land. So now we look at the Gemara. Ahani kro, the pasuk has relevance. The isle lamazik idis viziburis. A scenario where the mazik has top quality and poor quality lands. Viziburis dide, his own poor quality land, lo shavya keidis denizik. It's worse than, it's cheaper than, it's poor quality than the victim's idis, victim's top quality. In a case like that, dimishalim leila mimeitav, then the mazik has to pay from his own best quality. To review, however, if the mazik was fortunate enough to have poor quality land that was equal to the victim's top quality, then the mazik could get away with paying from his poor quality land. However, if that's not the case, then we don't allow the mazik to get away with it, and the mazik will have to pay from his own best quality land, even according to Rabbi Shmuel, in that case. We find ourselves in the middle of a very long discussion. We had a Tanaic source on the previous Omen of Gemara, featuring the Machlokas Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Kiva. The Gemara will continue analyzing that source, but in the confines or in the context and confines of a Daf Yomi Shir, we'll have to pause here, but recognizing that we're really in the middle of a discussion of trying to understand the Machlokas Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Kiva, and we mentioned earlier that Ravina Mirza Shem will appear on Daf Mem Tesam and Beis, giving his take on the our Mishnah, which spoke about the payment of Nezikin from Idis as being Tikkun HaOlam when it appeared that it was that it's Doraisa. We already saw Reb Abaye's approach to that, and Mirza Shem, the sugya will continue. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.